The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush, finally here with you. Sorry for a bit of a delay this week. We took a couple extra days to get some questions from you guys, which we will get to, and then I had computer issues on Tuesday, so we're finally getting it out to you, but thankfully Marquette had no mid-game week, so we had a little extra time to get this out to you. So, Phil, how you doing so far this week?
I mean, good. I mean, I guess we're, you know, just like the program, we're struggling here a little bit late in the season, but we're going to pull it together.
Hopefully we can get together a good performance for you guys, so we can look forward to hopefully a good performance from your Golden Eagles on Saturday, which is National Marquette Day, by the way. So it sounds like the game sold out, which is great, so should be a great atmosphere.
Yep. First one all season, right?
I believe so. Yeah. And apparently they're...
I think that was a bit
they're
more
color-coding the seats, but, as I understand it?
Correct. They're triple striping, which, I mean, I'd love to see us be able to get one color coordinated before we go to three, but yes, they're doing championship blue, dark blue, and gold. So check where you're sitting. And good news, if you are in need of a t-shirt and you are an extra large person, they're going to have a shirt for you.
So they're giving the shirts out. Shirts are going to be on the seats?
Yes, shirts will be on the seat in size XL, so, you know, plan accordingly.
Well, that's good, because you cannot pull – I'm sorry, I don't care how smart your fan base is. You cannot pull off that color coordination without giving the shirts away. You can't just trust 18,000 people to all wear the right shirt. It's just not going to happen.
Well, especially when it's a triple color, right? Like, if you could blast out a message that says, like, everyone wear gold – And I think you could probably get 90% compliance, but trying to do section by section stripes, that's gonna be a thing.
Well, anyway, let's talk about what's been going on with Marquette lately. A bit of a slide, Phil. Late, you know, they've lost four of their past six. Some of them, you know, losses that you can live with, like losing at Providence and losing at UConn. The Butler loss was obviously a total stinker, and then. A heartbreaker against Creighton, really, because that's, you know, my first thought on that Creighton game, Phil, was they had four or five chances to win that game, and they had the ball, I think, generally in the right guy's hands, and it just didn't work out every time, whether it was Morcell getting stripped, Justin dribbling it off his foot, Justin missing a layup, Omax missed a layup late, and then Greg's had his travel step over the line Lazar moment, whatever it was. So just four or five just yuck plays down the stretch. I mean, Marquette is really, like, literally two plays away from sweeping Creighton, and instead they're on the other side. They've now been swept by Creighton, which is a bubble team. That's a team you would have liked to get at least one against this year, but just a tough one. You know, it's not like it was an embarrassing loss or just a disaster or anything, but just a tough one to swallow because it was right there for the taking.
Yeah, I think the thing that's disconcerting, right, and maybe we're the jinx, right? Like, maybe we should just learn to not say anything about trends or sustainability or anything like that. I think the concern, like you mentioned, the four out of six, and it certainly was true at Creighton, and a little bit certainly against Georgetown, the defense has kind of slipped here a little bit, right? Like, you know, Creighton, now, you're right, the Creighton game was not an embarrassment, and Marquette held Creighton to 6 points in the last 4 minutes of the game, which really should win you the game. But when you couple that with, you know, because they had a 3 point lead with 3:33 left, gave up 6 points, you would think, you know, with Marquette and even with their sometimes challenged offense, you would think holding an opponent to 6 points in the last 3 minutes, Marquette can score 6 points, right? They can stay ahead or even with that team, and it just didn't happen. The defense, you know, wasn't perfect, and the offense had struggles late. And boy, that's not something we saw in January. So I don't know. It is a little worrisome that we seem to be trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think. trying to look it up here. I think it was Anonymous Siegel that was saying it's like four of their six worst defensive performances of the season were in the past few games.
Yes.
Yeah, like Creighton was the worst defensive performance as far as effective field goal percentage at 60.7%. That was Creighton's offensive efficiency, so that's Marquette's defensive efficiency. Butler wasn't much better. That was at 59%. The Wisconsin game was one of the worst of the year. That was at 59. That's two of the worst. Yeah, so two of the worst of the season were in the past three games, and then they had a 52%. So they've only had a few games where it was above 50%, which is bad. So the higher the worse. Talking about defensive percent. So the only other one that was really bad was Creighton back in December. That was at 55%, Connecticut back in December, I should say. Connecticut, that's at 55%. Connecticut the second time around is at 52%. Not many other – those are the only games above – the only other one above 50%, sorry, this was a win actually, was the Mississippi game. But, yes, only one, two, three, four, five, six games where their defensive effective field goal percentage was worse than 50%, and they've lost all but one of those, and three of those were in the past four games. So that speaks to what you're talking, Phil. Like, the defense has gone the other way. I think it peaked at 25th in the nation defensive efficiency on KenPom, and now it's down to 47. The offense, surprisingly, is better than the defense now. I didn't think we would ever get there this year. The offense is now 42nd. So Marquette is a top 50 KenPom team in both offense and defense. That's good. I mean, that's fine. But when you are up to 25 on defense, that's the, you know, when you move the bar and set the bar a little higher and then you go back the other way, that's where the disappointment comes in. It's like, well, we were used to being a top 40, top 30 defense, but now we're not anymore. So it begs the question, what has happened to the defense, Phil? Is it effort? I think I'm actually spoiling one of our questions that we got on for our scrambled questions. But it's the topic that's really most on everyone's mind is what has happened to the defense?
Yeah, I think so. The defense is the biggest concern. You know, when I look at it, I think there's really two main components. First of all, I think teams are just able to scout the Marquette defense better, right? There's more film on tape. It's more obvious and transparent what the team is doing. So I think that's one, that teams are just able to better game plan against the scheme. But two, I think the personnel are, you know, the personnel usage are changing, right? Like, in that Creighton game, the last 6-7 minutes, Tyler Kolek wasn't on the court. He was on the bench. He only played, I think it was 6 minutes in the entire second half, which we're not used to seeing. So there was a lot of Greg Elliott and Cam Jones combos, defensively, which, again, I'm not going to question Shaka and his lineup choices because he's been good at them all season. But there's an argument to be made that Cam and Greg together represent our weakest defensive lineup. So I think it's a combination of scouting and just lineup choices that are potentially out there to maximize offense. And as a consequence, the defense is a little less successful.
Yeah, I can't pin it down myself, but I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. Is the more tape the opponents get on Marquette, maybe they figure some things out. And Creighton definitely got Tyler Kolek out of his rhythm. To your point, is, you know, Shaka even said in post game that, you know, Tyler just got out of sync during the game and was never able to get back in it, and just wasn't confident that he was going to be able to execute at the level he has been this year as far as getting into the paint and creating for others. And yeah, I still would have liked to see Kolek on the floor handling the ball in some of those critical possessions late in the game, even though he had a rough game. But talking about the defense here, I don't know how much his effort on defense is pretty good. I don't know if the metrics back that up, but I don't think he's a liability on defense.
No, I think he's a solid on-ball defender and works well within the scheme. So I think if we're maximizing for defense, I think Tyler is one of the guards on the floor.
Hopefully he gets right and you know, the Creighton game is just a off game for him and he gets back on track on Saturday against Butler. Because, look, if Marquette's going to do anything in March, Tyler Kolek needs to be a part of it. And he just needs to be better than he was on Sunday. And I guess you can credit Creighton for that. But I think that is where the concern is, you know, we got so excited during that winning streak when they were knocking off undefeated team or ranked team after ranked team. And then we call this, you know, kind of the valley stretch of the season. Paint Touches call it the don't step on a rake part of the schedule. And they stepped on two. Well, I don't know if you want to call Creighton a rake, but still it's a game you could have won, but you didn't want to lose to Butler. And the performance against Georgetown was fine. It was fine for me. You know, you would have liked to win by a little more, but they won the game, but it wasn't an awesome performance against Georgetown, right? And like Georgetown is a team that you can beat on with your C-minus game, right? And so,
right.
You know, Marquette was not on its A game against Georgetown. It didn't need its A game to beat Georgetown. So I don't know the last time we saw Marquette's A game is, I guess, the question.
Probably the Villanova game on February 2nd,
I guess so, yeah. That
right?
was probably their last A game, their last really good game. So it's been a few, and in the last four games, Marquette was favored in three of them. Should have beat Butler. Definitely, they did beat Georgetown, and I think they were, depending on where you looked, it was a pick'em, I guess, against Creighton. They were a slight favorite in some books. Some others had Creighton as a one-point favorite, but still, that's a game you probably could have won, probably should have won. So, you know, they're in kind of the troublesome part is now, Phil, I think Marquette's kind of played their way out of one of those really nice seeds, like a 4-5, that range. You know, they're kind of a little bit of a free fall. It's not like a disaster just yet. It could become one over the next three. We hope not, but they are now kind of slipping into that 7-8 range where, you know, it's going to be a tough one in your first game. It's going to be a pick'em game in your first round tournament game. And you don't want to lose too many more, Phil, because then, like, I don't think there's much danger of missing the tournament, but, you know, if, like, catastrophe strikes and they, like, lose their last three or lose three out of their last four, you might be sweating a little bit on Selection Sunday. I still think they would be in, but I would rather not have to sweat on Selection Sunday. You know, most projections have Marquette comfortably in right now, that 7-8 range. So, but when your remaining opponents are Butler, DePaul, and St. John's, wins aren't going to do much to help you. They're just kind of pushing off disaster, right? They're just, you're kind of fending off,
right?
You know, bad losses that are really going to bring you down.
Yeah, I think the key is that, like, to your point, we're probably sitting, I think most projections, including Alan Bukowski's, you know, from Crack Sidewalk's own estimation, puts Marquette really at a 7 seed, which is probably, given the scenarios, the farthest you want them to be, like the furthest down the seeding you want them to be. And any loss amongst the next three puts them at a lower seed, right? So that's the thing we're looking for, is maybe if you win all three and maybe you win, you know, one or two in New York, you can come back up to a 6 seed, which I think is the ideal seeding for Marquette, all things considered equal. But at a minimum, you don't want to drop below that 7, because you really don't want to be an 8 or a 9, because that second game is then against a 1. You know, miracles can happen. We could beat a 1, but you really want to stay, you know, you want to stay on the good side of the 8 seed, so you can
exactly
avoid that second game.
You don't want to run into Gonzaga or Arizona your second game, you know, assuming you win the first one. But you know not that beating a 2 seed like Kentucky or Purdue or Duke would be easy by any stretch, but, you know, historically, there's always 1-2 seed that goes down the first weekend. 1 seeds almost always make it to the second weekend, and there's only been 1-1 seed that has lost their first game, of course, Virginia. But you can, you know, you feel much better about picking off a 2 seed, maybe. But yeah, it would be nice to be able to climb up and make that case to be a 6, because then you're playing an 11 seed in your first game. You should be a comfortable, you should be a decent favorite against whatever 11 seed. And then you're a 6 playing a 3 the next game, where, you know, you feel you got a shot in that one too. So, yeah,
Right. Well, and I mean, the thing to keep in mind is teams are going to lose around us, right? So if we win out the last three, just about every team has a harder finishing schedule than Marquette does, right? Yeah. I mean, let's be brutally honest. Butler at home, DePaul on the road, and St. John's at home. I mean, unless one of those teams is flip-flopped with Georgetown, there is not a quote-unquote easier closing schedule on paper.
Yeah, as far as the Big East goes, right?
Yeah. Right, as far as the Big East. And, you know, and other teams, again, you know, North Carolina's got a tough, you know, within the ACC, quote-unquote, as tough as the ACC is. Right, so the other bubble teams are going to lose around us. So, again, if we lost all three, could we fall our way out? There's probably a scenario, but I think it's like 99.9% percent chance we're locked in. But like, let's not have that chance. I mean, let's not explore that space. let's stay in the 6-7, and you know, and really, you know, some of this is about getting, you know, it's almost not even about the result. It's about getting right and feeling right for the tournament. Like I mean, if we win four games in New York, great, and we win the conference, you know, the conference tournament, that's cool. But that's, so I rank that somewhere below regular Big East title, getting to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament, and maybe in this scenario, I'd rather win one game in March in the tournament than bother worrying about the Big East tournament.
My opinion there is always, if I, you know, asked you to name the last three or four Big East tournament champions without looking, how well would you do? You know,
I know one, Georgetown. Like,
I remember Georgetown last year. Then you could probably guess Villanova somewhere here or there. But, you know, conference tournament champions are generally forgettable. But what you want to get rid of is expressions like Marquette hasn't won a tournament game since 2013. Shaka Smart hasn't won a tournament game since 2013. You want to erase phrases like that, right? And so getting a tournament win does that. So, yes, I will always value one tournament win over a conference tournament championship. Now, don't get me wrong, that would be fun, and I would celebrate it if Marquette were to do that. But I am with you 100% that conference tournament titles, while fun, are generally forgettable. There are achievements, many other achievements that I would rather see this team do. Number one, yes, win a tournament game, getting to the Sweet 16 is way, way more memorable than winning a conference tournament. And, of course, winning a regular season conference title is, in my opinion, way more prestigious than winning a tournament conference tournament title. So, yes.
Right. Yes. I mean, I think, like, if we're setting what standard we want to see between now and Selection Sunday, here's what I want. I want three wins in the regular season and one win in New York. That's all I want.
And that one win in New York, like, would probably be Creighton. Like,
right.
Depending on what happens down the stretch, I mean, there could be some shifting, of course, but it's looking pretty solidly that the top three in some order are going to be Providence, Villanova, UConn, and then it's probably Creighton and Marquette in some order, four or five, doesn't matter. You know, they're going to be playing each other. It's just going to be a matter of who's wearing white in the game. And then everyone else kind of comes in after that, Xavier and Butler and everyone else. So, it's a pretty good chance we're getting Creighton for a third time, and I would be up for that myself. Like, because it's been close twice, and Marquette is kicking itself over both the losses because Marquette had both of them won. So a third time, I'd be up for it against Creighton for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and it's crazy. I suppose I didn't even think about doing this. You can do it with the Bart Tavorek website, but I'd be curious what position we'd be in if we had swept Creighton and everything else had stayed the same. I mean, we're probably at that point, we're probably looking at a four seed, right?
We'd be higher. So, like, on a bracket matrix, which I'm looking at right now as we're recording on Wednesday, Marquette is averaging out as the top seven seed there. So the best seven. So you figure, like, two wins against a bubble team, you're probably zooming past all the sixes and getting into that five range.
Right, right. Which is fine. But anyway, speculation aside, we need to win the next the next three games for sure, preferably convincingly, but, you know, at a minimum, just win the games. And it starts with Butler at home for National Marquette.
Yeah, so do you want to do the questions or get to Butler? You want to do Butler?
Let's do the questions. All right. And then we'll
you have the questions,
back.
Right? So why don't you shoot off the first one? We asked for some of your questions on social media. We had picked out a handful. We're just going to go through them here on the pod before we wrap up and talk the Butler game on Saturday.
Yeah. So we touched on I am wildly unprepared here. So let me pull it up. So I have the person's name. So Charlie Weber, and we touched on it a little bit, but it's good. It's worth renewing again. How would you rank the possible reasons for the defense's lackluster performance? I'll throw out the options of tired legs, other teams adjusting to Marquette. We have some significant gap somewhere that somebody's discovered and exposed. Or, you know, is it lucky shooting where people just got better?
That's tough. You know, like, yeah, we did kind of touch on it earlier, but if I had to rank those things, I would guess teams adjusting a little bit and maybe learning how to attack Marquette better would be one, and maybe that's leading to number two, teams just playing better against Marquette. If you want to call that luck, I guess you can, but that leads to better open shots and shooting for higher percentages. I don't even want to blame tired legs. I mean, everybody's tired this time of year. It's not like Marquette has been in a situation where they played, you know, three games in 5 days or something like that, you know, or they're playing significantly more games or more road weary than everybody else they're playing. I can't put it on that. So just by process of elimination, I'd put that last. And so I would have to put effort above that. It's not like, I'm not saying they're not trying, but, you know, maybe they forgot some things, you know, and maybe read some headlines about how well they're doing and maybe got away from what made them so good in January. So I would say the teams are playing better and attacking better, and maybe Marquette needs to make an adjustment to their adjustment. And then, yeah, maybe they have, because I feel like, you know, just anecdotally, so the opponents are getting better looking shots against Marquette, and they're shooting at a higher percentage because of it. The transition defense maybe hasn't been as good as it was in January. So I guess I would rank them those ways. Like, teams adjusting, getting better shots, and maybe a little luck coming with that, then effort, and then I would put tired legs as the last excuse.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would. I originally was thinking tired legs to a certain extent, right? Long season, young team, not used to it. But I don't know. You know, Marquette had 6 days off between the Villanova victory and the loss at Connecticut. And that first half of against Connecticut, they looked. I mean, Connecticut outpaced them, right? Like, and they should have had the most energy of this late in the season at that point, right? Which is a little concerning considering we're playing Butler 6 days after Creighton. But, I don't think it's tired legs so much as a little bit of a lack of focus, right? And you touched on it. Maybe they're reading the press clippings. Maybe they think, you know, things are a little bit more automatic than they actually are. But I think it's predominantly, you know, teams are starting to scout better and getting a feel for what Marquette's doing defensively. I'd almost like to see Shaka and the team self-scout their own defense and see where their habits and tendencies are and maybe change them up. I would actually put luck pretty high up there. It sounds like an excuse making, but like that Butler game, some of the shots, even in the moment that Butler hit, were ridiculous shots they don't make ever. And they shot almost 15 percentage points higher than they normally do. Marquette's defense could have been better, but let's be honest. It wasn't abysmal. It wasn't, you know, Butler shoots 15% better. These weren't completely unguarded shots. You know, they were hitting shots from logos. And I think Creighton had a couple of shots that were just ridiculous that they went in. So now you can always argue Justin Lewis's three against Villanova, you know, in the Finneran, was luck. So luck cuts both ways. But I do think, you know, Marquette's gotten a couple of bad breaks of late that they weren't getting previously. And then, you know, and then lastly is going to be, you know, just from an effort standpoint, right? They're just not putting in the effort to the defense that they were in the past.
You know what my opinion has become on luck?
What's that?
The difference between luck and clutch is whether or not you like the team. And the team that helped me realize that is the St. Louis Cardinals. Like, if you are a fan of the Cardinals, you would say things like, when our team's in the playoffs, our guys are clutch. We have guys step up. They get big hits. Where if you hate the St. Louis Cardinals, and I know we have many Brewers and Cubs fans who listen to this podcast, you will always use terms like Cardinals devil magic. And like when they have a right. minor leaguer who hit 200 in the regular season suddenly go 8 for 12 in the postseason, if you're a fan, you call that clutch. If you hate the team, you call that luck. So, yes, that is how I define luck. The difference between luck and clutch is whether or not you like the team.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think that's a good one. So I think we've effectively buried that topic, right?
All right, moving on to the next question.
So let's move on to Leo Ferry, who we're gonna bastardize the question a little bit. But basically, the piece we're gonna pick out is Greg Elliott, who has been playing well, shooting well, is eligible. You know, he can go to college for 6 years and become a doctor, I suppose. He's eligible for a sixth season. Does he come back next season? And is that how does that impact the rest?
Yeah. Like, the original question was about transfers and stuff, and like, I don't like picking out individual players talking about whether they should transfer or not, because I think that makes them it makes them almost feel like unwanted, or that may not be something they're thinking. That may not be what the coaching staff is thinking. It's like, you know, these guys are guys who not played much this year. We got plans for them going forward. Let's not talk about them transferring just yet. But with Greg was part of the question. And it is an interesting thing. Like, having never spoken to Greg about it, I've never even met Greg. I have no idea, like, what he would be thinking. Because 6 years is a long time to be in college. Like, what's the line in Tommy Boy? Yeah,
lots of people go to college for 7 years. Doctors, yeah, they're called doctors.
It is a long time to be in college. And I don't know if Greg is ready to move on with his life and do whatever. He's already he graduated last year, as I recall, because I want to say I saw pictures of him with his cap and gown last spring. So he's already taking some post-grad classes and working on whatever secondary degree he's working on now. So who knows? Maybe for him it's worth it to get another free year of classes and make more progress, if not finish that degree he's working on now. I don't know what, if any, kind of pro future Greg would have or want to pursue. If he wants to go try to play overseas or something somewhere, he should probably do it now. Because Greg's probably, 23 now? 22, 23?
Yeah.
You should probably go now if you want to get paid before you get too much older and teams just aren't interested. But who knows? Maybe I don't know. Greg's probably not making tons of money off name, image, and likeness deals, but who knows? There may be a scenario that whatever extra chunk of change he could get as a college athlete would be comparable to whatever pro opportunities he may have out there. And it may be kind of a push as far as being a college athlete or being a pro wherever he would have an opportunity, if any. So, like, from a business standpoint, it may make sense for him to just stay in college another year. Now, that goes both ways, right? Because the coaching staff would have to want him back, and I assume they would. But it would get to the point of the question was, it would get crowded in that backcourt, because you're the only guard you're losing this year would be Morcell, and then you've got Greg coming back, and you got a couple guards coming in, and then you've still got Ellis, who hasn't played much this year. It would seem to be a little crowded there, and I'm not sure how it would work out. It seems like if Greg did move on, Marquette has definitely plenty of pieces to make up for his loss. But I don't know, Phil. Do you think there's some something redeeming about a sixth-year senior and having that kind of leadership on a team that would still be relatively young?
I don't think it hurts, right? As long as it's the right attitude and, you know, and the right fit. I mean, let's not forget that Greg had the suspension early in the season that, you know, we don't know what it was about, nor are we entitled to know about. But, you know, if Greg's aligned with the mission and vision that Shaka's laying out, if he comes back, you know, good, so be it, right? Like, this is one of those I trust Greg to know his own future and self, and Shaka to know what's good for the program. One thing I would point out that maybe changes the calculus of this a little bit, you know, you mentioned the opportunities in Europe, etc. I mean, I don't, if Marquette makes a good run this season, what are Greg's NIL opportunities, right? Like, maybe there's I think people tend to forget about this with everyone going ballistic about the transfer portal and stuff like that. You know, with NIL, that kind of balances out the transfer stuff, because if someone's gotten an established, you know, reputation at a school, there's more opportunities for them, especially the mid-tier talent, to take advantage of NIL than it is to go someplace new and have to reestablish, right, you know, kind of your brand recognition. So I think NIL may play a factor here, but again, I'm not going to speculate whether he goes or stays. I'm just going to say that whichever he does will be a combination of best for the program, yeah, and best for Greg. Like, I'm confident.
Yeah, see, like, I have no idea what kind of money Greg would make off NIL. Like, he's not getting rich either way, but yeah, he's also not getting rich in whatever league would probably want him in Europe, right? Like, yeah, the best leagues in Europe pay very well, but there are also very small leagues that pay very, very little, right? It's just like guys who just love the game and just want a chance and hope it leads to something better, right? I don't know, but like, there's some leagues that may pay the American equivalent of like $10,000, you know. Could Greg get that as an NIL athlete? I don't know, maybe. I have no idea what kind of money Marquette athletes are hauling in this year, but it could be kind of a push, right? Maybe just get a little bit of money, but also work towards a degree here, or just take a shot at being a pro, whatever opportunity that is. I have no idea what Greg's pro prospects are. So it will be an interesting thing, because that's really kind of the number one wild card in the offseason, right? Because we know you're losing Morcell. We know you're losing Queth. Well, I guess the number one wild card is whether or not Justin goes pro, but I think most of us are kind of assuming he would. But the next wild card after that is, does Greg stay or go?
Right.
So that'll be something to follow in the offseason, but I'm personally not ready for the offseason just yet. I'm still excited about this one. So what's the next question we got?
Okay. So from Mark Lackey, I guess. Listen, I'm terrible at pronouncing normal words, let alone people's names on Twitter. But Mark asked, who needs to come talk to the team to set them straight and get them ready for March? And he conveniently tagged Jarrell McNeil and Jimmy Butler. I think this is hearkening back to when Wesley Matthews came in and talked to the team before the Providence game this season. So who would you invite to the locker room?
I think he's tagging the right people there, first of all. I'm sure Jimmy Butler would give a very passionate speech about having a dog mentality and getting ready for March, because you know, Jimmy played on some good teams at Marquette. Trying to remember correctly, he got to one. Was he on one or two Sweet 16 teams? He was on two, right? Yeah, so he was on two Sweet 16 teams. So he's had success in March, and I think he will again. He can inspire some guys to take that next step and fire them up. So I think Jimmy's a good guy to talk to. I mean, I would say Wes if he hasn't already done it. But Wes Matthews, I know it seems like the team really loved hearing what he had to say. I'm trying to think of somebody else who...
So I've got one, and there's this very specific set of reasons. I don't know that this is a dark horse thought, but I will pick the third amigo that's been unmentioned, Dominic James. And I will do this for a very specific reason. And it's painful memories for us. Dominique was not only talented, he was really good defensively, and he can really speak to, like, guys, this is your one moment in the sun, right? Like, not, man, that's a bit That's a bit overwrought, but you know, he broke his foot when God bless him, he tried to come back. But that team was positioned to make a deep run, right? So having him come in and talk about, you know, what the games mean and seizing your opportunity when you have it, and chance can intervene at any time. Don't give anything but the maximum effort. I think could be impactful for this team, right? Especially a young team.
Could be. By the way, misspoke earlier. Jimmy Butler was on one Sweet 16 team. He was on the 2009 team that lost in the second round. You're talking about Dominic James's team. So he was a sophomore on that team. Then he was a senior on the 2011 team broke through and beat Xavier and Syracuse. Of course, he had that great defensive performance against Tu Holloway, against Xavier. Then they beat Syracuse in the next round. So Jimmy Butler has been to one Sweet 16. But I would love to be a fly on the wall for a Jimmy Butler speech to the team. I think that.
Oh yeah, that would be epic.
So, yeah, I think Mark's tagging the right guys in there. So I like that one.
Okay. Well, we've got two more here, and they're quick hitters. Perhaps a little bit tongue in cheek. We got Drew 245, who's got his profile pic has him under a Creighton banner. So I don't know if he's you know Marquette or what's going on there, but he does want to know what is it with Marquette Creighton games and inbounding disaster.
Right, because he's referencing obviously what happened with Greg on Saturday, and then that Creighton game a couple years ago where Creighton threw it the length of the floor at the end of the game and essentially gave Marquette one last shot to get a three-pointer off. Sam Hauser did, barely. Yep. That tied the game, went to overtime.
Well, and I would argue Sam Hauser did not, but replay didn't catch that one.
All I'll say is shit happens sometimes. I don't know. It's not on the level of weird stuff happening in Marquette-Providence games, because Marquette-Providence has had some wild stuff from brothers coming on the court to defend, or family members coming on the court to defend their brother, to bats, to slippery floors due to ice. So we have had some much weirder stuff in Providence Marquette games, but who knows, maybe Creighton Marquette is evolving to have some weird stuff too. Maybe we'll have some another weird instance in the third round in New York if that ends up happening.
I just think the ghost of Lazar showed up. Yeah. That's all this week. That's
ghost
all
of Lazar was. Is a weird... interesting comparison
that's,
there, but
it's a combo. It's a thing. So Drew, we do not know, but we would, if we play in New York, we'd like to see it stop.
Well, if it happens again, we hope it's against Creighton.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So last question that we have here from Artificial Life on Twitter is, explain the difference between a charge and a block in college basketball.
I cannot. And it,
I can't. I shan't. I won't.
I got nothing. Yeah, I will never know. It's probably time to get rid of the charge altogether. And yes, maybe that would get flopping out of the game if there's no benefit.
Well, yeah, Brad Davidson would be out of a career. Well, I'll say this: it is, and you are a witness, obviously, because we talked about it. But we talked about including this question yesterday when we went to record before your computer decided that updating was an approximately 90-minute endeavor. But we put that on the agenda to answer that question prior to the UConn-Villanova result.
Right, and the real tough way to end that game, but boy, James Breeding had his day in the sun, so good for him.
Oh, boy. Sun shines on a baboon's ass every once in a while.
And he makes sure it is always on him.
Yes, correct. Wherever the sun is, there you'll find his naked ass.
There is James Breeding. When people know your name as an official, that's a problem. If people...
I still love the article, the Athletic article, where they went around and asked coaches for... you know, for their opinions and of the officials that were common, and all the officials had mixed commentary, but there was literally one comment for James Breeding, and it was something to the effect of, makes it all about him. And I'm like, notes. Perfect.
I think there was like a somebody caught Patrick Ewing on camera during a game this year talking about Breeding. He goes, this mother calls everything.
Oh, and look, now we've made the show about him. Oh, well. But yes, we cannot explain the charge or the block. They are mythical entities that, you know, it's much like Atlantis. Does it exist? Don't know. But, you know, we talk about it.
Yeah. We got anything else?
Nope. I think we have satisfied the scrambled questions.
Oh, do we have the one about who we would and would rather not face in the tournament?
Oh, yeah. That's right. So, we do have a question. You're right. This question is brought to us by Mo Jacan and Foom23 on Twitter, who both want to know, who do we want to face out of the, the 10 or the 9 through 12 seeds, and who do we not want to face out of those as currently later?
Okay, so the candidates here, just going off Allen's latest bracket matrix, I'm going to exclude Big East teams, of course, because we cannot play a Big East team.
Of course.
So TCU, Murray State, San Francisco, Wake Forest, Iowa State, Miami, Notre Dame, North Carolina, Indiana, Oklahoma, Memphis, BYU, Oregon, Loyola Chicago, Dayton, North Texas, Iona. That's pretty much all the 9 through 12 seeds. I've always, generally speaking, Phil, been of the opinion I would much rather have a bottom of a power conference team that has limped into the tournament as opposed to a very fired up and motivated mid-major team who cannot wait to whoop your ass. So, in other words, I would bring it on Notre Dame, North Carolina, Memphis, Indiana. Those are all fine. I want no part of Iona, Loyola, Chicago, maybe even Dayton, North Texas, because those teams are going to be so fired up to be there. Like, I hate Murray State. Like, we've been through that one before. They don't have Jothans this time, thankfully. But, yes, I don't like playing these mid-majors who are just so fired up to be there and finally play a power conference team, because that, like, taking all the analytics or metrics out of it, that's just a general statement. Just give me the bottom of a power conference team that just limped in.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I would be fine with that. I think I can narrow my desires a little bit. I do not want Iona. No way, no how do I want to be anywhere near a Rick Pitino team in the tournament. Like, just hard pass. I don't want Murray State because, yeah, I mean, I still feel the reverberations of Joey Hauser getting posterized. Yep. I don't want to revisit that. On the want side, I 100% more than anything else in this world, I want Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And if we can't get Notre Dame, I want any ACC team that's not named Duke.
Right.
Like, the ACC is a mediocre conference this year. They're getting by largely on reputation. And even Duke, I think, is a bit overhyped.
No, they're beating all these other teams. North Carolina, I mean, Dawson wouldn't be there because I think he's left the team to be with his family for the rest of the year.
Yeah, medical concerns with his family. Yeah, yeah.
So he wouldn't be there. And they just haven't played well all year. And I agree with you. They are playing on getting by on reputation. Miami's another ACC team. And, yeah, Notre Dame fits that mold as well. Maybe Oklahoma, you know, and Memphis is a team that maybe they would be fired up to be in there, but they also have really struggled with youth all year. So, funny thing about them, they got Imani Bates, and that kind of was why they were like a preseason trendy, you know, I don't say Final Four pick, but a team that would be in the top 25 and interesting all year. But when they've had Imani Bates, they haven't been very good. So I'd be up for taking on Penny Hardaway in Memphis too, if we got to play somebody. So I'd be up for that.
Yeah. Let's just say this. I'm not worried about Penny Hardaway being like some sort of coaching savant.
Yeah. Even though Jalen Duren is awesome and would be a tough matchup for Queth and Oso in the middle, I think Marquette's guards could do very well against Memphis's guards.
I agree.
So those would be my answers. But yeah, I agree. I think it would be awesome to face Notre Dame just because, I mean, Marquette and Notre Dame are historical rivals, of course, and I think they're renewing that rivalry. Is it next year or is it the year after when they're going to start playing again?
I believe it's 2 years from now.
Okay, so they it'll be a couple years, but you know they used to play every year. Obviously, when they were in the Big East together, they played every year, and they played every year before that. It's just a rivalry game, so it'd be good to could be take down the Irish. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd welcome them back. I mean, I would love to hate them again.
Yes.
Is really what I'm saying.
Exactly. All right. So we got a few minutes left before we got to wrap up this pod. Quickly on Butler, the rematch. Just a quick thought, Phil. What happened at Hinkle can't happen again. And, yeah, Butler shot lights out the first time around. You cannot allow that to happen. Being in a different gym, hopefully Butler's shooting would be a little colder anyway. With a sold-out crowd, hopefully that knocks Butler off their game a little bit. And you know, KenPom has this as a 12-point spread. I don't know if I would lay 12 points in this game, but Marquette should win comfortably. We said that the first time and it didn't happen, but I'm dead serious about it this time. Marquette should win this game with some level of comfort.
Yeah, let's put it this way. If Marquette does not win, I mean, going away means different things to different people. But if Marquette isn't trending towards a double-digit lead in this game, at the end of the game, something's rotten in Denmark, right? Like, then I would officially start to be concerned about where this team is trending and did they peak too early in January and that sort of thing. Because this should be a game. Yeah, Butler gave Providence a scare, and again, very successfully coached, you know, Providence, not at all lucky. We should definitely extend Ed Cooley. Providence had a heck of an overtime scare against Butler.
Yep.
But I don't know that they have that many arrows in their quiver that they can that they can do that again. Crowd should be fired up. First sold out game of the season. Maybe Butler gets confused with all the colors, you know, of the stripe out.
I will say, Butler has only won two road games in the Big East, and I bet you can guess which two.
Is one of them going to be Georgetown, and is the other one going to be DePaul?
You are correct, sir. Those are the only two road games they have won in the Big East. They've obviously been way better at home. All of their other wins have been at home in the Big East, and some of their better performances and losses have been at home, including that Providence game you were just talking about. So, I think the road away stats are pretty striking with Butler. So take care of business. Just wrap this thing up. Win it going away. Turn up the intensity on defense. Hopefully the crowd is loud and into it. It's National Marquette Day. I got no excuse for them if they don't get this one done.
I have a real insight here. Don't go down by 20 in the first 10 minutes of the game, and I bet you win.
Yeah, don't do that. Butler has a game before this one, not to play the tired legs card because it's on Wednesday, so it's Wednesday night as we're recording this. So it is another road game. It's at Seton Hall. But, yeah, Marquette has all week to prepare. Marquette should be ready for this one. There's no excuse I would have for them to lose this game against Butler. So get it done.
Nope.
And I think they will.
Yep.
I'm doing the take my money setting that at just 32 deflections. Keep the intensity up on defense. That'll set up the offense for success. That'll get it done. So that's where we're at.
I like it. Yep. I think a Butler win or a win over Butler. Oh boy. Good Lord. I think a win over I hope I didn't just put that into the universe. A win over Butler, I think, is just what we need to start to feel a little better and prepare for the God's sake, don't lose to DePaul or St. John's week.
Yes. Yeah, we'll hopefully be a fun yet cautiously optimistic tone on next weekend's pod as we look forward to the last two games of the regular season. So we're almost there, Phil. Hard. Almost bracket time.
It's hard to believe.
Yeah.
Hard to believe.
It's been a hell of a ride. Still got a few adventures on this roller coaster of the season, but I think they get it done on Saturday. I am. And hope everybody enjoys their National Marquette Day, whether it's at home, whether they're going to Milwaukee. If you got a watch party where you live, I would suggest going because they are pretty fun. Good time to network and meet people in your area who went to Marquette. We're having one in Dallas. So wherever you are, I hope you're able to enjoy it one way or another.
Hey, yep, the family of four is all making the journey to the Pfizer.
So oh, nice. The entire Bush clan. Awesome.
Oh yeah, this will be the third game this season they've all gone to. So all right. I'm excited and looking forward.
Be sure you wear the right shirt.
Yes. Championship blue in my case.
Excellent. So. Excellent. Good color. Hey, hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com where we post a podcast. Leave your comments on the website. And also, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And there's a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. Phil, enjoy National Marquette Day. Have fun. Make sure everybody's loud there. Let's make it look good on TV.
Yeah, I will personally go to everyone and ask them to be nice and loud for the television.
Excellent. Have a good week, everybody. Seashells and balloons.